Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. Well, if you're a woman going through perimenopause or menopause, generally in the mid to late 40s, depending upon their overall health, or into their early 50s, then you know there are a lot of different conditions that occur. You can have thinning of the eyebrows, underactive thyroid, you can be gaining weight but not overeating, mood swings, insomnia, loss of hair and fungus under the nails, weakness, loss of muscle mass, all of these things, many more hot flashes, night sweats can occur because the body is rebalancing itself. So you're no longer in the prime of your reproductive cycles and the body is shifting you into a different phase of life as far as the hormones. But one of the things that are noticeable is that our skin begins to change. It's no longer tight. It's no longer full. You start to see the creases and the crow's feet and the lines. And even if you do proper hygiene and take care of your face, if you're out in the sun, you can prematurely age it. If you drink alcohol or smoke, that'll definitely premature age it. If you have a deficiency of vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, magnesium, you can also prematurely age your skin. And a lot of people are not into a really healthy skin and hair protocols. So Yale University School of Medicine did a study and they found that the deeper your wrinkles, the weaker are your bones. It was once thought, and it was fairly accurate, that some people fall as they age and break their hips. But now we start to realize that something else was occurring. Many of these individuals had porous bones. They hadn't paid attention to the strength and the nutrients and the hardness of their bones. As a result, they didn't fall and break their hip. The hip crushed. It broke itself. Then they fell down. Unfortunately, a lot of people die because of infections that occur from that. Also, keep in mind, a part of your immune system, your B cells, are born and mature in your bone. So the healthier, stronger your bones as you age, the healthier you're going to be. And this is particularly true for women in menopause and postmenopause, because that becomes a very frustrating thing when a person says, I never used to have this belly. Where'd this belly come from? And even people that exercise will find themselves frequently with extra fat accumulating around the abdomen, where before they had a flat belly and actually had abs. So this is why it's so important to take care of ourselves, and especially if you're in perimenopause or in menopause, and certainly postmenopause. Recently, it was 2 years ago, in the second of our anti-aging clinical studies, we had a woman in her mid-90s, 94, and her doctor did not want her to come, fearing that she would break bones because of how severe her osteoporosis was, just sitting on an airplane. And she couldn't do any exercise. But she said to the doctor, look, I'm 94 years old. I've had a good life. So I'm going to try this. And she did. And thank goodness she did, because we gave her an impedance test. And everyone listening, watching this, should have an impedance scale. It's not expensive, somewhere around $30 to $40. And you set it if you're female, if you're athletic, and your height. And then you step on it. And it tells you the percentage of your body fat, protein, water, and bone density. And then you make a note of that. And then you start to change your lifestyle and add in nutrients, exercising that can strengthen all of that. A lot of people are dehydrated, especially people who are long distance runners and older people. They just don't drink enough liquids, especially healthy liquids. And a lot of people drink coffee and think that that's a good thing to drink. It's not. It's a diuretic. So you're actually taking water out of the body, and with it, a lot of micronutrients like calcium and magnesium, selenium and zinc that you need. So the idea is start looking, have a simple bone density test taken, and see how strong your bones are. And then if they're not, then look at what you need to do, and that's easy to come by. It's not difficult. There's standard protocols with magnesium, manganese, calcium, silica, vitamin K, vitamin D, that can help you remineralize your bones. And over a period of time, you get those minerals back, you get a strong bone, and that's important. And that's what this showed. But it also showed one of the signs you may have thinning of the bones is how deep your wrinkles are. So, and by the way, once you're on a healthy protocol, you can reverse a lot of those wrinkles. And that's what people don't realize. By the way, later I'm going to be doing our classroom on the air today, and that does not air on this, but you can go to Gary Noll YouTube or Odyssey or Rumble, and you can watch how to grow hair if you're thinning, balding, or premature gray, or if you've had male pattern or female pattern baldness. All right? That's important. And a lot of people can benefit. As you see, I have a full head of hair. It's thick. And this is just when I get out of the shower and I take a little bit of olive oil and water and I just run my fingers. That's it. If I didn't do that, my hair would be way up the ear. I get a cut frequently. And the nails the same way. Your fingernails, toenails should be pink, smooth, and hard. No fungus, no cracking, no flecking and chipping. And a lot of people, they look at their fingernails and toenails and they're not healthy. So what will help the hair, as it turns out, also helps the skin. And mind you, I'm here in front of, 500 watt lights, a high quality camera that does not protect you. There's no Photoshop, no makeup, nothing. And you see the quality of my skin? Look at my nails. And that also means that I'm bringing into the body what the body's using and needs. And we should all do the same thing. At least get yourself tested 3 times a year for all your hormones, for your immune system. And that's important because you have to know, do you have adequate DHEA, the mother hormone that from which other hormones are made? Are you balanced in testosterone, estrogen, progesterone? If not, you can take in nutrients or foods or juices, or in the case of postmenopausal women or menopausal women, natural hormone stimulators. And these are not synthetic drugs that increase your risk, by the way, of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia, 13%. And the 10 million women taking these per day, that means that 1.3 million women a year are putting yourselves at risk of death or those injuries I just mentioned. Where if you take the compounding formulas that are available all across the country of the natural hormone stimulators like Dong Quai, Fo Tai, Vitex, Walvine, etc., and then you're doing it naturally with none of those side effects. And remember, caffeine is really bad for you and it can disrupt hormones. But something else, we're all born with, male or female, with different hormones, but we're also born with genes, and that determines. But you shouldn't stop there, because years ago, the Institute, and Dr. Lawrence Lesham was doing the research, and brilliant scientist, brilliant psychologist. And he wanted to know why some people born with male hormone or male genes and chromosomes were more effeminate or had a proclivity towards the feminine. And he figured that it was in the hormones. And sure enough, over the years, there's been tremendous amount of research to show that when you're taking in hormones or you're born with extra hormones that are not in normal balance, you can have certain qualities. For example, if you have excess testosterone, you tend to be more aggressive and more hyper and kind of the ultra masculine. And then think of all the bodybuilders, almost all. There's some that haven't, but the majority do. Or football players or athletes in any sport. When they start doping and suddenly they're able to outperform other people, records are broken that had been stable for decades, like Babe Ruth's record and then Roger Maris's record. And for a long time, And then suddenly a whole group of people break it, then you know there's something else going on there. And that something else is dopamine. Excuse me, it's doping. Think of Lance Armstrong, seven Tour de France wins, find out he cheated. All right, but how many others cheat? A lot, according to the athletes. So now it's kind of considered normal for everyone to be more masculine or more competitive in doing anything to win. Here's what they don't take into account. What do you think that extra hormone is doing in your bloodstream? How do you think it's impacting the DNA and the telomeres and all the other cells? And we've seen the consequences of additional cancers and immune dysregulation after a period of time. So just want to share that when you start taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy, if you're menopausal, think you're really putting yourself at risk of injury and death. So just consider that, because there are natural ways to rebalance your hormones and to maintain healthy skin, like quercetin and vitamin C work together to create new collagen. By having the nutrients that actually create the collagen, then suddenly you don't have to use Botox, which is a very toxic, it's a toxicant. And it causes your immune system to have to work extra to get rid of all those elements, those antigens. So yeah, what you're doing, you're paralyzing the underlying musculature so your skin folds straight down, so you don't see wrinkles. You still have them, but you've paralyzed the muscles. That just makes no sense. Whereas if you do it naturally, then you'll have tight skin, plump skin, properly moisture skin, drink enough liquids. It'll help your skin also. Anyhow, I'm doing that today. So you can go later today to Gary and All YouTube and look under how to grow hair. If you're bald, thin, and by the way, I have male pattern baldness. All the men in my family, on my mother and father's side, my brothers, my father, all bald. And I was going bald. And I didn't drink or smoke or do coffee or caffeine. Took my nutrients, diet, exercise, and still I couldn't stop it. But then one day I did. Purely by accident, I figured this out. Then I did two big clinical studies. 5,000 people showed up for those studies. One worked, and then it didn't. And then I found out why it didn't, and then went to redo it, but having different criteria for people to stay in the study. And then it worked big time. So I'm going to share that with you today. Anyhow, just one more comment here, and that is mild exercise for 3 months is shown to enhance cognitive function and brain efficiency in older adults. This is the University of Tohoku in Japan. Here's the takeaway message. Maintaining and promoting cognitive function in older adults can be aided by regular exercise. Now, previous research has focused upon the effects of moderate to high density aerobic exercise programs lasting anywhere from 6 months to a year on executive function controlled by the prefrontal cortex. The challenge lies in motivating individuals to engage in and adhere to rigorous exercise. Well, building upon prior investigations, the scientists concluded that you have to have people do mild exercise also, like power walking or yoga, that can stimulate the brain and yield temporary improvements in cognitive performance. However, until now, the impact of long-term mild versus rigorous aerobic exercise on the brain function in humans, as well as the underlying mechanisms involved, remain unexplored. So that's the new study. People 55 to 78 who were divided into different groups, and they just did mild exercise, but they did it on a daily basis, and it caused really important improvements. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal GERO Science, G-E-R-O Science. And I'll just share one last one. 3 hours in the sun cut your breast cancer risk. This University of Toronto. New research has suggested that women who spend an average of 3 hours a day in the sunlight, that doesn't mean laying on a beach, just in the sunlight, can reduce your risk by 50%, 50. And it's the latest in a series of studies that add to the already strong evidence that the sunshine vitamin helps prevent cancer. All right? Just being outdoors. Being outdoors. You're stimulating the production of vitamin and D and the exposure of sunlight. And that makes a huge difference. 50% reduction in breast cancer. That's the latest on health and healing. And mind you, you can watch this show. By the way, zinc prevents diabetes damage, University of Michigan. You can watch by going to prn.live, scrolling down to archive, and scrolling down to Gary Noll, because I've got a lot of clips that are very important, and one exclusive one that you haven't seen anywhere. And we like to think that we're sharing information with you that is accurate, that is important, and it can make a difference and hopefully enhance or save lives or save you from disease. So all that you can watch in these clips coming up. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. And as always, we like to bring you cutting-edge information, hopefully exclusive in many cases, but most importantly, accurate, honest, with good scholarship to back it up. I'm not impulsive. I don't rush into anything. I take my time. I wish you could see what happens in a 24-hour day, how many hours are put into validating and verifying the accuracy, objectivity, and fairness of what is out there, because a lot of it is not. And so we reject about two-thirds of what goes on the program because it can't be independently validated. But here's what can be validated. Virtually every single thing they told you about COVID was a lie. And now they should be held accountable in a court of law. In fact, I believe there should be a new Nuremberg tribunal for those involved. Not for people who chose to be vaccinated because they trusted. That's understandable. And we do not shame people who believe in the course of their actions, even when it turns out they were wrong. For them, the issue is, What went wrong in my selection process? What did I not have that if I had known that, I would have made a different choice? Because I believe if everything that was known is known now was known then, very few people would have signed up to do any of the things they told you to do, because we've debunked every single thing. This is not conspiracy theory. This is good, hard, independent science. In fact, virtually everyone that I've invited on my program have been historically people I would have only invited on to debate. This means ultra-Orthodox, highly respected, peer-reviewed published authors, frequently at professorial levels in colleges and universities. Now, those people had the courage, and I commend them for that, that when something was going wrong and they saw it was wrong, they called it out. Because after all, if you're the most respected and published and cited cardiologist, nephrologist in the world, as Dr. McCullough is, then you have an obligation. Even in orthodoxy, even when orthodoxy is wrong, you have an obligation to tell the truth. He did. And thousands of other physicians and scientists told the truth. Every single one was condemned, no matter what their background, no matter 40, 50 years of an impeccable career. You cannot, under any circumstances, challenge anything that the Democrat faux liberal, they're not true liberals. True liberals will have nothing to do with censorship. They believe in freedom of speech. They believe in freedom of choice. They do not believe in compulsory thinking. And they certainly don't believe that you should impel speech. You'll either say it or you'll go to jail or you'll be fined. No. True conservatives, true liberals have nothing to do with the Democrat or Republican parties. So, what do we have today to let you know specifically and with good scientific merit the consequences of those who are vaccinated? We're going to play two tapes. The first is a Dr. M. Todd Trebony, T-R-E-B-O-N-Y. He's a medical doctor, he's a scientist. And this is a very short clip. Some of these clips are only 30, 40 seconds long. And he's saying the following, in case you don't understand. He has a little bit of accent. He's from Europe. Quote, spike proteins is in the testes, almost no spermatocytes in there. If I was a woman in fertile age, I would not plan a motherhood from a man who was vaccinated, end quote. I'll go one step further. If you have spike proteins in your testicles, and if I was a woman, I would not want that sperm in my body under any circumstances, because we have no study showing what will happen when a spike protein that we relied to about how short it will stay in the arm, the deltoid, it didn't. Some people who were vaccinated a year ago still have the spike protein multiplying every day in important organs of the body. So just imagine how potentially lethal sperm that is infected is, and all the samples he tested were the same. And he has a screen, and he's showing you the actual sperm and the spike protein in it. You haven't heard this before. This has not been broadcast anywhere. This is exclusive. Let's go to the clip. It's short, but listen carefully.
Not one single sperma to a soul in this, and a strong expression of the spike protein. So if I may make a personal comment, this is not a scientific comment. If I were a woman in fertile age, I would not plan a motherhood from a person, from a man who has been vaccinated, unless... I think these pictures are very disturbing, very disturbing.
All right. So think of all the men out there, of all ethnicities, all ages. How would you feel if you found out that every time you got a spike protein, it was going into your testes and polluting, corrupting the integrity of your sperm? Is that one of the reasons that Naomi Wolf and her 3,500 person strong experts who are getting hundreds of thousands of documents that they didn't want us to see? Now think of that for just a moment. Just, you don't have to be a scientist to understand what I'm about to say. If the FDA says, we don't want you seeing the results of the manufacturer's human clinical trials for 75 years, that means everyone's going to be dead who's now adult in 75 years. So you want to keep the truth from the public until they're all dead? Why? Well, it's obvious, because what was in that information that the FDA knew, the CDC knew, Anthony Fauci knew, U.S. Collins, head of the U.S. Public Health Service, overseeing all these, knew, was that it was causing myocarditis, it was causing sterilization, it was causing women to become infertile, and a lot more. All these hundreds of side effects. They knew it then. That means malice aforethought. That means, legally, that the individuals can be sued, doctors can be sued, pharmacists, nurses, people who had the education and the moral responsibility, fiduciary responsibility, to make sure that they were not promoting anything that could have such serious side effects as to cause death or permanent disability. And yet none of them did their homework. That's on them. That's not on the American public. The American public has to ask, why was I so indifferent? Why did I believe completely? Are these the same people who had nothing but praise for going into Iraq with weapons of mass destruction based upon lies? And also, what about all the other lies we're told by the same group of people and by the same media where no one is held legally accountable? Is that an even justice system? No, the reality is we have three forms of justice in the United States, and it's time that we all honored this. There's the justice for the average person. If you jaywalk, you can get a ticket. If you go to a meeting to question the reason why they're promoting a pornographic material to a four-year-old in class, you can be arrested. You can now be seen as an enemy, local domestic terrorist, the enemy within. That's officially designated that through the Biden administration's Justice Department. What kind of Justice Department would do that? Is this like the Stasi's in East Germany? Yes, but worse. So this is what we're up against. Now you have the second form of justice, and that is corporate justice, where you might be found guilty or not, but no one's going to jail. What about Vioxx? They knew at the time it was being distributed that it would cause an increase in heart attacks and strokes. They did it anyhow. They earned about $12 billion. They were fined nearly $5 billion. The stock price went up. The person ahead of the company got a raise. Nobody went to jail. No one's reputation was harmed. And the mainstream media went along with it. Let's put this lessons learned, put it behind us. What about the 60,000 people minimally, more likely 500,000 who died? What about all the people who didn't die from the first heart attack, but a subsequent heart attack or stroke did die? They never kept statistics. We could be looking at a huge number of Americans over a five-year period who died, probably one of the single biggest crimes in American history. And more Americans died from one drug that was known at the time to cause these effects than all of American casualties in the Vietnam War and the First World War combined. So that's a second type of justice. If you're rich, you can hire the richest attorneys, and you're going to have a lesser deal against you. But then there's the third and most insidious form of justice, the deep state. These are real people and real agencies, and they're nothing but evil. The CIA, the FBI, Homeland Security, the National Security Agency, and many other entities. When was the last time that any single person or agent engaged in assassination, taking over foreign governments that don't want to play by our rules, were held accountable? How about never? Well, how about lying before Congress? No, several people, head of the CIA, lied before Congress, and Clapper, head of the National Security Agency, lied before Congress. Nothing was done. So you see, even when the truth comes out, a person in power and the party in power, completely corrupt, totally corrupt. Just do the math. Nancy Pelosi is now worth $120 million minimally. She gets to sit in on meetings where it's known that there's going to be trades, acquisitions, selling of corporations. She calls her broker and says, sell this, buy that, and that's legal. If you did the same thing, that's a criminal offense. You can go to prison, and people have for that. But not if you're a legislator. How do you go from $230,000 a year salary to $120 million? And she's only one example. Because you're trading on information that the public does not have access to, and you're protected, indemnified from it being a crime. So that's the third type of justice. Crimes committed, major crimes committed, the worst crimes committed. From 1945 till now, it's estimated 20 million people on the earth died because of our actions. Who's held accountable? Who was held accountable for Yemen? Who's held accountable for Libya and Syria and Honduras and Ukraine, all of which we precipitated? No one. The evidence is there, yes. But that's the third entity, and those are permanently protected. So how in the world can anyone say we have an equal justice system? We have the most corrupt, perverse justice system imaginable. So if you think anyone's going to be held accountable for crimes against humanity, they will not. Now let's hear another one. This is Dr. Michael Yeadon, and he explains to Dr. Drew how lipid nanoparticles, remember the ones that I told you pay attention to 2 years ago, the ones that morticians were finding look like rubber bands that are filling our arteries and veins and were causing people to drop dead of a heart attack? Well, he says we've known since 2013 they accumulate in the ovaries, quote, of every species tested, meaning every species, including humans, they collect in there. Wow. Well, then the more vaccines you get, the more you should be aware that you're playing Russian roulette. Let's go to the clip. It's short, but I want you to hear it firsthand.
This is something that's so shocking. You may remember that the J&J and AstraZeneca, they were DNA vaccines, and they had a so-called attenuated virus. I think it was an adenovirus. But the mRNA products from Moderna and Pfizer BioNTech, they were encapsulated in a formulation. It's normal to formulate drugs to give them structure and to allow them to travel around the body and slow release and so on. What did they pick? Lipid nanoparticles, LNP. I found a paper dated 2013, I think it was, 2012 or 2013, and in which it was discussed in a peer-reviewed journal article paper that lipid nanoparticles, the macro carriers for these molecules, are known to have a characteristic that's rather upsetting. That characteristic is they accumulate in the ovaries of every species tested. And in the case of the Pfizer product, the Japanese regulators required Pfizer to perform a distribution study in rats, which they did. And we've seen a copy of that report under the Freedom of Information Act. And lo and behold, it accumulates in the ovaries of rats. This formulation was chosen, in my view, in the full knowledge that it would accumulate in the ovaries of girls and women. That, I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, is what's happened to every single female administered this material.
Okay. So listen to this. The manufacturers knew before the vaccines that the nanoparticles would cause devastating effect in the body. They knew that it's going to accumulate in every single woman vaccinated's ovaries. They knew that the spike protein could go into every man's testes and destroy their sperm, causing all forms of birth defects or sterility. Why would they go ahead with it? Oh, could it be that one of the biggest areas of science now is the weaponization of nanoparticles, because the nanoparticles, they can control and put messages in. Now, I'm not saying they've done that yet, but that's what people are working on as we speak. So you get a vaccine, or you get something that has those nanoparticles, now they've got a way of monitoring your body and everything else besides that. Would you have taken these vaccines had you known that at the time? I doubt it. Now, finally, two short clips. I just thought you would find these interesting because it tells us a lot about a certain segment of our society, the ones that yell and scream, the ones that say that you can't use a word that I don't like because my life will be over and I'll have to run and feed with my mother, even though I'm 30 years old. Yeah, these people. Listen to this clip and see how you feel about it.
Do me a favor and watch this video.
This just died, bro. He just died, bro. Holy f-.
What you just saw is a guy going to take a selfie in front of a guy he just watched get stabbed to death. Social media didn't do this. The impulse to behave like this has been inside of us forever. But never before in history has behavior like this been rewarded at such a massive scale. And guess what? This story doesn't have a happy ending. A fiance lost her partner. A daughter lost her dad. And this is a million times more famous than he ever dreamed of being because of this video. He got the fame he was chasing. And the worst part of it is that we made him famous. Society is a mirror of the individuals inside of it. So tell me, when you look in the mirror, what do you see?
Okay, think of that. Think of all these people out there who hears a person that he could have called an ambulance. He could have gone over and put a compression on with his hands, something he could have done. Instead, oh no, this is an opportunity. This is going to get a lot of likes and shares. That's how superficial a whole part, not all, of a new generation are. And this goes right up through millennials as well. And that's why when I told you after my recent visit to New York City and seeing a person who was clearly mentally ill swinging a large, long steel pole at people's heads, they were just on their phones. They just ducked out of the way and went on. Nobody did anything. Well, now we see that what happens when a guy gets on a, in New York City, Manhattan, gets on a scooter bike and just starts shooting people and then has a smile when he's arrested. Or someone else just goes over and starts bashing in people, bashed in four people's heads. It's just another day. Get used to it. Really? Yes. So just wanted to let you know, remember the Kardashians became famous, became billionaires. Two of them are billionaires now. Why? A sex tape that one of them made and who had someone else get out over the internet. Well, so that means that if you make a sex tape and you get it out over the internet, you could become a billionaire? Well, we got examples of that. And that's unfortunate. Here's another clip, and listen carefully to what this fella has to say. This is extemporaneous conversation, short, about a minute long, but he makes some profound observations.
I made a video saying that I enjoyed Joe Rogan's podcast. Immediately, I lost 15,000 followers. And I got all these hate comments about, oh, you love guns. I was like, no, I like his podcast. It's, oh, you're a right wing. I'm like, I don't even understand American politics. I just like his podcast. And then one of my clients reached out and said, Vin, take that video down. We can't be seen to be working with someone like you if you're posting this content, especially on LinkedIn, we take it down. I was like, I think it's easier for us not to work together. You're changing who I am. You're making me lie to everyone to pretend to be something that I'm absolutely not. And I see this all the time. People are so afraid of what other people think that they will do whatever other people want, and those people don't care about you and they'll forget about you anyway. If you try to please everyone, you will end up pleasing no one. The person willing to state the truth and be themselves, very powerful. Whereas the person that allows every other person to dictate what they do does not have power.
Would you agree or disagree with those thoughts? I'd like to hear your answer at the end of the program. At 55 minutes, we have to say goodbye to WBAI. But until then, think about these things I'm sharing with you. In every area of COVID, the people on the inside made hundreds of billions of dollars for their corporations and billions for themselves, if you're Bill Gates. And they were wrong about everything. And yet they continue to want to be the next force. And the World Health Organization, the criminal organization, completely corrupt, is the organization that wants sovereign power with a treaty that if there's another episode, they alone can dictate what should be done and what the conditions are and what happens if you don't adhere to their conditions. So we're going to play part 4 or 5 of The Cost of Denial. Why? Because I want you to see the truth that you will not see in the New York Times, or you will not hear from any of the AIDS organizations. In fact, to the contrary, they're the ones most likely to challenge any of this, which they have done since the 1980s. When I wrote the first article, I'm the first journalist in the United States to write an article critical of AZT, and then I went on to write about 14 more articles, what I was critical of in the war on AIDS. Now, I'm not an AIDS denier. They would like you to believe that. In fact, I'm the only person I'm aware of that has ever cured AIDS and kept every single person I work with. That's 2,000 people, 1,200 in one group, but from 1974 to 84, about 800, who was working with one of the leading gay physicians, New York, Dr. Stephen Kaiser, with his patients and getting them healthy. Those protocols to get them healthy, I then later used and expanded on for treating people with full-blown AIDS. Not one of the people died. 18 reversed their condition. An independent documentary proved this. You've heard top journalists, Emmy Award-winning journalists, who spent months looking at the medical records, blood workups, interviewing the patients before they would have me on with them. And that was a lot of different journalists, all within the African-American community, none in the Caucasian community. Press conference, Senate, 7,000 invitations out 3 times, not a single member of the AIDS community. The foundations or workshops nor any media showed up. But we filmed it. We played you a little clip of the press conference. All-day seminar with some of the greatest scientists in the world that I paid to come into New York to share their natural approaches to AIDS. Not a single person within the media showed up. Harlem, 3 days in a row. And in fact, it was Bill Tatum who said to me, and later Arthur Ashe, they were there, and Isaac Hayes and Cicely Tyson, a lot of people, a lot of Black African-American physicians were there. Place was packed. And Arthur Ashe said to me, he says, you know something, I'm not aware of any other Caucasian that's come here who's not an entertainer or politician or preacher that fills the Apollo Theater. It was funny. He never took the protocol, by the way, even though he spent a lot of time interviewing people who had and reversed their condition and looked at the medical records with the patient's permission. He refused to. So you've learned a lot up to this point. Imagine if the people then would see that there was another approach and they could have a choice. Take your AZT, take your DDI, DZC, protease inhibitors, take all that. Or take a natural approach, and here's our proof. Here's a medical staff of 22, and here's all of our work, here's all of our records, and let's see which ones actually work and which ones caused the death of 300,000 people. That was AZT. Was anyone held accountable? No. Did they become rich? Phenomenally rich multimillionaires. Where'd they get that money? Bruce Welkin, the maker of AZT. This is a story that needs to be heard. Because the same organizations, the same people frequently who controlled the war on AIDS with disastrous effects have controlled the war on COVID. Let's go to the clip.
Alternative views. We're immediately told that we're being highly irresponsible, that we're encouraging the gay community into things like unsafe sex, and we're being completely and utterly disregarding the anxieties of people who
Gary,
have,
can you hear me?
HIV and AIDS.
Because how long do you want
and anxieties
this
that
to
they
play
don't
for?
Need. And this is quite wrong because as a journalist,
perfect, got it.
I believe in totally open debate in whatever the area should be.
Will do.
In fact, the World Health Organization accused me personally when I was writing on these articles of being responsible for millions more projected deaths. Millions more projected deaths in the UK, definitely, and, you know, worldwide. They were saying by raising these issues in an important paper like the Sunday Times, you will be doing so much damage to our efforts to tell people about this peril that is awaiting. And they would believe this when they were saying it. I can't think of another national newspaper, any other national newspaper, that came to the support of the Sunday Times when it was doing this. All the medical and science correspondents were united in either being silent on the issue or else they would be ready to join in with others in attacking the Sunday Times and accusing it of irresponsibility.
Right after I got the Nobel Prize in chemistry, man, I can't even write a short four-page hypothesis about what might, in fact, be a probable cause of AIDS. A hypothesis that was a useful one because it suggested a way to disprove it or prove it. You know, that's what a hypothesis is for, is to sort of suggest experiments that will try to disprove the hypothesis, or if you can't disprove it, you start slowly accepting it. And so, Lancet, Nature, Science, those people say, we don't need a hypothesis directed at understanding what might be causing AIDS. We already know. And I call back the editors and I say, no, wait a minute, this is, you got to like, in Lancet, there's got a section called Medical Hypotheses. That's a type of an article you can submit. I said, this is a hypothesis. This is a very good hypothesis. Not only can it be proven or disproven easily with rats or mice, but if in fact if it turns out that this does cause AIDS, you'll have a model system, an animal model system, which would be worth billions of dollars to the pharmaceutical industry.
AZT was approved under very shady circumstances in the late 1980s by the FDA with no safety and no efficacy data. They did it anyway. I read all the documents that I obtained from the FDA and wrote an article about it in 1989 called Sins of Omission.
So many members of the gay community, most of which were the people getting AIDS, were entwined with the entire concept of needing AZT. Now, AZT has a litany of side effects. In fact, it weakens the immune system even more. And when you have AIDS, your immune system is already broken.
It was a drug that was lying around at the National Cancer Institute, an old chemotherapeutic agent that was shelved in the early 1960s because it was considered too toxic for human use. Too toxic as a chemotherapeutic agent in the early 60s, is now pulled out of the drawer and revamped for a syndrome of immune suppression. So this is what I would call psychotic medicine. What happened was they chose it. It was just like this darling chemical. They just chose it. And then everybody started to rally behind it, that it showed promise, that it showed early, and the activists got wind of it and they wanted it approved quickly. Why all of these people got behind one of the most toxic chemicals ever administered for human use is a complete mystery.
I don't know how many of the people who have died, so-called of AIDS, have actually died of AZT, because it certainly would wreck your immune system to take that stuff for a few years. It's like if you started taking any other chemotherapeutic agent for the rest of your life, it would be that agent probably that killed you. You know, when you give chemotherapy to somebody with cancer, you give them a round of it for maybe 14 days or a few days. Hopefully you're not going to kill the patient, you're going to kill the cancer. The patient's going to survive. But you don't keep giving it to him until he dies, because he certainly will. And AZT is just like those things. It's a little more lethal than most of the anti-cancer things that people take for that.
According to a presentation at the AIDS conference in Barcelona in 2002, and a scientific study published in the Journal of Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, December 2003, more HIV positives were dying from organ failure as a side effect from the HIV drugs than dying from AIDS.
As I understand it, Burroughs Wellcome saw very early on that they could make a move into a new market. You can hardly blame them. That's what capitalism is. It's an ever-expanding market, isn't it? And of course, in this country, along with Professor Robin Weiss, they developed one of the first antibody tests, which gave them an open door to sell the drugs to the people who tested positive on their test.
Burroughs Wellcome and all of the other drug companies are making millions and millions of dollars off these drugs. The new protease inhibitors that are out there right now, they require you, in most cases, to take other antiviral drugs with the protease inhibitors. In other words, you just don't take the protease inhibitors, you take the AZT and the DDI or the DDC, combination of all these drugs. The drug companies are making a fortune.
What they look for is surrogate markers. Now, have you heard that term battered about? Surrogate markers means, well, it doesn't seem to do anything for the disease, but it does every now and then do something for the level of CD4 cells that we measure, or it does something for this or that. Not that anybody really knows whether you want more or less CD4 cells at any particular time in your life. A lot of diseases cause CD4 to go up. A lot of diseases cause it to go down. Nobody's even sure if a CD4 cell is always a CD4 cell.
I've met hundreds of patients. I've interviewed them. T cells, 1, 0, 30, 80, perfectly healthy people, and they just go on like that. T cells, I don't think they have any idea what T cells are.
Just it's a marker on the cell at the time that they do this little counting procedure, which is to stick a fluorescent tag on there and say the ones that light up have CD4 on the outside. And we don't really know what those cells do. The immune system is incredibly complicated. And the immunologists' brains are not nearly complicated enough to deal with it. We have these little, you know, there are theories all over the place, but no real competent immunologist would tell you that CD4 levels was a surrogate marker for anything until we know more about it. But that's what they're using. That's what the FDA is saying, yeah. You don't have to show that it helps them. These protease inhibitors, the same thing. You don't have to show that it helps the patient. You don't have to show a single life saved. All you have to do is show some little clinical indicator has changed in a way that somebody is hoping is going to make you better.
And according to the largest and longest scientific study of HART, highly active antiretroviral therapy, the drugs being given today are even more dangerous and offer no increase in longevity than those given in 1996.
Having created and marketed the HIV story, the US government scientists, Fauci, Gallo, who were primarily responsible for doing this, they needed a drug to go with it, because gay men at that Washington AIDS conference, they were demanding, I remember the demonstrators, they're saying, give us the drugs now. You know, they were really afraid, and they really felt that drugs were the answer.
And once it was approved, tragically, the first dose, which was chosen at random, was so high it could kill a horse. It was 1,800 milligrams of this incredibly toxic chemical. And that early dose just killed people like flies. They were dropping like flies. They were that emaciated, discolored, you know, skeletal person sitting in the hospital bed gasping. That's an AZT victim. But it was branded in the psyche via the media as an AIDS victim.
Bring it down, 3 minutes, Gary.
Which served the purpose of making people so afraid of AIDS and Bob Gallo's new virus that they would do anything the government told them to do.
Of the studies used to claim benefits for AZT, all of them, without exception, were financed by Burroughs Wellcome, the manufacturer of AZT, and were controlled by them. And I would say, therefore, they are open to question simply on this basis alone. The few studies over which Burroughs Wellcome had no control, one of them being a study conducted in Paris by Adurnon and colleagues, found no benefits for AZT. And the Concord study, which took place between Britain and France, giving AZT to people who were asymptomatic, also found that there were no benefits to AZT.
We see examples like the Concord study or the Veterans Administration study that say that these approved medicines only benefit the pharmaceutical companies and their stockholders.
The phase two trials were the basis of the drugs being approved by the FDA for marketing in the United States, and also the basis for the drug being approved in 31 other countries. There were all sorts of irregularities. Actual cheating took place in at least one of the centers. And on top of that, the investigators, the people working for the FDA, used data which they knew were bad. And yet this study is still being used to claim that AZT extends life.
AZT causes diarrhea. AZT causes muscle wasting. It causes a whole host of complications.
AZT causes instant old age.
How do you know which is the disease and which is the effect of the drug?
One courageous activist whose voice has never been heard, but is nevertheless crucial for understanding the politics and corruption behind the AZT trials, was Lynn Gannett. She was a field observer for the National Institutes of Health during the AZT trials conducted in Syracuse, New York. She discovered the protocols were improperly adhered to, the trials were not properly double-blinded, and she accused the federal agency of gross scientific misconduct.
During the 3 years that I participated in the early AZT clinical trials, I witnessed the most shocking, unethical, unscientific, and corrupt behavior by the clinicians conducting these studies. Whenever there was an adverse reaction, such as diarrhea, or weight loss, or night sweats, or vomiting, or fevers, or the development of an opportunistic infection, this information was supposed to have been recorded on an as-needed form. Often these things were not recorded.
These are Gannett's notes that I've never seen.
Okay, final part tomorrow. Again, do you see why you need to hear this? Because this was the war on AIDS. It's still going on, still being mismanaged. There is no opportunity to use any of the natural non-toxic therapies or protocols that have worked, not only mine, but others around the United States. This is how corrupt science has become, science by consensus and science by economic control. Hopefully, we got to say goodbye to WBI because they're going to their news. We're going to continue at PRN.live. I'd like to hear your input now. You've had a lot of different issues expressed today. Give us a call, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you. And just a couple thoughts. Earlier today, I filmed over an hour and 5 minutes, discussion on how to regrow hair, how to reverse thinning, baldening, graying, and help your skin in the process. I give both the orthodox model and I give the alternative model. And I give my own particular input and how I evolve this whole concept. But it works. I've done two clinical studies, and I also see the benefit of people who are in the health support group where I'm using the same identical study that just happens to also grow hair. So you can go to Gary Knoll YouTube account and download today's program. Since we only have half our staff today, someone was out today, so Dylan will finish editing this and get this up sometime this afternoon. So I would suggest waiting a couple hours, then you can go up and download it. It'll also be posted on Odyssey and Rumble, as well as on GaryKnoll.com. If you have a thought and like to share it, please give us a call now. Dylan, if we have any calls coming in, I'll be happy to take them. If not, I'll go on to another issue that I have in front of me. Do we have a call?
No calls right now, Gary.
Okay, no calls. All right, then, this is from John Anisha Whitehead. He is one of the finest constitutional attorneys in the United States. And his article is entitled, The Next Phase of Government's War on Thought Crimes. Quote, there are no dangerous thoughts. Thinking itself is a dangerous activity. Hannah Arendt. Quote, get ready for the next phase of the government's war on thought crimes, mental health roundups, and involuntary detentions. Under the guise of public health and safety, the government could use mental health care as a pretext for targeting and locking up dissidents, activists, and anyone unfortunate enough to be placed on a government watch list. If we don't nip this in the bud, and soon this will become yet another pretext by which government officials can violate the First and Fourth Amendments at will. This is how it begins. In communities across the nation, police are being empowered to forcibly detain individuals they believe might be mentally ill, based solely upon their own judgment, even if those individuals pose no danger to others. In New York City, for example, you can find yourself forcibly hospitalized for suspected mental illness if you carry, quote, firmly held beliefs not congruent with cultural ideas, end quote. Exhibit, quote, a willingness to engage in meaningful discussion, end quote, have excessive fears of specific stimuli, or refuse, quote, voluntary treatment recommendations. So let's just say that you listen to this program and you have some views about woke identity politics and the whole resurgence of a race culture by certain minimum individuals, meaning they're not the maximum, they're not the majority, but these are race hustlers. And so identity politics, especially when using it in the context of critical race theory, is itself racism, massive racism. And they're balkanizing us, trying to get people to fight each other based upon you're racist, you're racist. This is all stupid, and yet it's coming out there. So let's just say you say you believe all people are equal, or you believe in that all lives matter. Cop could say, nope, you're wrong on that, and arrest you and put you in a detention. That can happen. And while these programs are ostensibly aimed at getting the homeless off the street, that's a pretense. When combined with advances in mass surveillance technology and artificial intelligence-powered programs, they can track people by their biometrics and behavior and mental health sensor data, tracked by wearable data and monitored by government agencies like, such as HARPA, H-A-R-P-A, threat assessment, behavioral sensing warnings, pre-crime initiatives, red flag gun laws, and mental health first aid programs. Because after all, if you believe that anything in a vaccine is harmful, well, that makes you a vaccine denialist, and that constitutes a hate crime or a thought crime. So you see how broad this is, and this is happening now. This is not the future. So better pay attention to what's going on, because once it gets into the halls of state legislators or in Congress and becomes a state or federal law, then we've turned America into a nothing less than a gulag. And that is very sinister. Then you're looking at the gulags of the Cold War era Soviet Union. By the way, the word gulag refers to a labor or concentration camp where prisoners, oftentimes political prisoners or so-called enemies of the state, real or imagined, were imprisoned as punishment for their crimes against the state. The gulag, according to historian Ann Applebaum, used as a form of administrative exile. That sounds better, doesn't it? It's like Martin Sheen. He was going to go kill the rogue colonel Marlon Brando play, and he says, My job is to execute with extreme something. Anyhow, it was assassination, but they cleaned up the word. So now they've cleaned up the word, administrative exile, which required no trial, no sentencing procedure, and was the ideal punishment not only for troublemakers as such, but also for political opponents of the regime. Totalitarian regimes such as the Soviet Union are also declared dissidents mentally ill and consigned political prisoners to prisons disguised as psychiatric hospitals where they could be isolated from the rest of society and their ideas discredited and subjected to electric shock, drugs, and various medical procedures to break them physically and mentally. So, is it coming? It's here. Warrantless seizures, surveillance, indefinite detentions, isolation, exile. Sound familiar? Look at President Obama's National Defense Authorization Act. All of that is in there. They can pretty much do whatever they want unless you show us your voice and speak out. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for watching and listening today. Things to think about. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And now stay tuned for Utrice Lead. And Utrice's program, because of its success, because of empowering its audience, because of Utrice's unique gifts of being able to communicate with a broad swath of the American public and its concerns and having an open forum, we want her to have a larger audience. So she's being moved as of Monday to prime time in the evening, 5 o'clock. So we hope that a whole new audience, in addition to her existing audience, listen to her there. We have Naomi Wolf on Monday following me at 1 o'clock. Then we have Abby Martin, we have Ralph Nader coming up, Jimmy Dore, and others for that five-hour strip across Monday to Friday, 1 to 2. Have a nice day, everyone.